The award-winning TV adaptation of Paul Scott's Raj Quartet, which depicts the lives and loves of people caught in the turbulence of India struggling to break the chain of oppression. It was filmed on location in India, England and Wales and set in the period of 1942 to 1947. The Welsh scenes used some of the camp buildings in Kynos and a scene with Dame Peggy Ashcroft in a Tonga, an Indian vehicle, during a monsoon storm hurtling down a steep forest road. The film is still available at the time of writing from Amazon.com via the internet. 1936, when Ken Rowlands was about 80 years old, the collection of corrugated iron buildings, now commonly known as the camp, was being built. He remembers the old lorries with trailers behind them, loaded with sand, bricks and timber, etc., crawling slowly along the old road to the village. Their weight and frequent passing caused much damage to the narrow road and verges. On at least two occasions, he remembers them sliding off the road altogether. Once by the old tramway bridge on Rhiw Graidin Tips, a lorry coming down the little hill there towards the village slid off the road altogether. The stone retaining wall that was built to repair the road afterwards is still doing sterling service there. The second time was right in front of Brindilas, where a lorry ran off the road and down the bank. Half the village turned out to watch it being recovered, including a photographer. Ken recalls that the camp was first built as part of a job creation scheme by the Ministry of Labour. Yes, they even had them in those days. When it was finished and in use, he remembers unemployed people would come there from the Birkenhead area for 3 months at a time and would be given work building new roads over the mountains for the Forestry Commission. They were each given a pair of thick corduroy trousers and a pair of stout boots for the work. The building we now think of as the old village hall was then the main cookhouse for the camp. Another building, the same size as the accommodation huts and located near the far front corner of the site, was used as a recreation hut. On a Wednesday night, the local village people were allowed to go there to watch the silent films on the small projection screen there. Friday night was Boxing Night. If anyone fancied their chances, they would put their name down on a list and await their turn, wondering who their opponents would be. Being amateurs, sometimes in the heat of the moment, some would forget it was only a bit of sport. For instance, one night Dick Jones Kynos Bach and Bert Redford were put in the ring together. At the end of one round, after the bell had sounded, Bert was sitting on his bucket in his corner, and Dick was still laying into him. Incidentally, when the authors were attending the youth club at the camp in the late 1960s, the boxing equipment was still there for anyone who wanted to settle an argument. During the war, the camp was used as a borstal school for youths from the Midlands. The man in charge was a local character called Jimmy Luke. One day, some of the youths attempted a great escape. They tied Jimmy Luke to a chair and ran off. They stole a car belonging to Luther Morgan from Corris, but must have abandoned it soon afterwards. By this time, troops had been called out from Tanwanai Army Camp in Tawin to search for them, and they were eventually all rounded up on the mountain near Kilgwyn Llanwrin. At the end of the war, the camp's use changed yet again to that of a holding camp for German prisoners of war waiting to be repatriated. They were mostly officers of quite senior rank. Most of them were quite friendly and, given the chance, would chat freely with the locals. Some had been educated in England at Cambridge or Oxford universities before the war and had spent holidays cycling around this part of Wales, some on tandems. If they spotted the local youths playing football, some would, if possible, join in, stacking their coats up to make goalposts. When the officers eventually went home and the camp was once more vacant, which was much longer after the war than most people realise, it was taken over by the Forestry Commission to provide homes and jobs for our own homecoming soldiers. One row of huts was demolished along the front of the camp facing the village and the commission set a plaque on the lawn to mark their arrival. Over the coming years, the camp was adapted and built up into almost a self-contained village. Eventually, there was a church, a children's playground with a slide, swing, seesaw, and a sports field with football and cricket pitches. The old cookhouse was converted into a proper village hall with a youth club and a fully equipped snooker and billiards room. The beautiful billiard table was donated from Garth Gwynion Hall in Glasspool, to where we believe it was recently returned. The main hall was equipped for all the usual village functions, like jumble sales, whist drives, women's institute meetings, Christmas parties, etc. At election times, it was used as the local voting office. Anyone old enough to remember the jumble sales and sale of work in the 1950s, 60s and 70s will tell you what exciting, fascinating and hectic events they were. The whole village, and often surrounding villages too, would turn up to rummage through all the stalls lining the inside of the hall. The hall would be packed solid with people, some pushing and shoving to get to the bargains first, with so much banter and babbling going on that you could hardly hear yourself think. The children would head straight for the lucky dip, a tub filled with sawdust in which were hidden small toys wrapped in fancy paper. Sometimes games and competitions were set up to keep the kids occupied while Mum got on with the serious business of bargaining, hunting for school clothes, working clothes, and maybe even a party dress to keep for Christmas. There was even a thriving small library in the hall, run as a sub-branch of Newtown Library, which was popular in the days before television started to arrive in the area. It closed sometime around 1967-8. The accommodation huts were made into 14 quite comfortable bungalows for Forest Commission employees and their families. So between them and the offices and the working activities of the men, the camp was busying with life in its heyday. Sadly, the Forestry Commission have run down their use of the camp in recent years. The facilities have all closed, even the hall. The accommodation built over 65 years ago is starting to look neglected, although two bungalows are still occupied. The village is waiting to see what next the site will be used for. The next British Olympic village, maybe. When working deep in the forest, high up in the mountains, far from the nearest house or road, it can be difficult to gauge accurately the passage of time. Such a problem faced Ken Rowlands and his workmates Elved Mespoeth, Joe Brynllwyd and a Mr Thomas when they found themselves working halfway up Daran Cadian without a watch between them in the 1950s. Mr Thomas claimed he could tell the time from the sun by pushing a stick into the ground and measuring its shadow. For want of a better idea, they agreed to let him be timekeeper for them for the day by his method. When he said it was 10 o'clock, they stopped for morning break, likewise at lunchtime and again for their afternoon break. And when he said, "That's it, lads, time to go home," they took his word for it and packed up for the day and set off down the mountain for home. Most of them followed a route towards Corris behind Brynllwyd Bach, but Ken took a more direct route to Esgygailiog via Tan y Coed. On the way down he met a black Labrador, followed soon after by his master, Mr. Ladman, the forest area manager, and Mr. Fraser, the district officer. Mr. Fraser asked Ken rather abruptly, "Where are you going?" Ken replied, "I'm going home, sir." "Well," said Mr. Fraser, "you'd better stay home for good then," and walked off with his companion. Summary dismissal was not uncommon then, and Ken had been home for 3 days when he saw Mr. Fraser by the Methodist chapel taking snuff. Mr. Fraser asked Ken why he was home. "You told me to stay home," he replied. "Well, you report for work tomorrow morning," he was told, which Ken did, and he had his wages at the end of the week. It transpired that Mr. Fraser, Mr. Griffiths, another forester, and William Bach, the foreman, had heard all about the stick sundial in the Brach Goch pub in Corris, and had a good laugh about it. When the lads thought it was 5 o'clock, it was only 2:30 in the afternoon, and that's why Ken was fired for going home early. When they saw him next day, they asked if he had bought a watch yet. "Yes," he replied, "I bought one in Machynlleth Fair for 5 shillings. Nowadays, most of the production work and harvesting is done by private contractors like Mark Jones. Some of the more specialist work is still done by Forestry Commission staff like Hugh Davies and Ken Griffiths. Elwyn Davies still lives in the camp in 13 Isle of Bryn and is the son of Tom Davies,